He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
And we'll start off by talking a little bit about the strike, because General Motors has been in a strike for what, 6 weeks now?
I think it's a little less.
But yeah, a little less, but it's getting up there. And it's not. Apparently, it's not going to be settled today, which at the beginning of the weekend apparently was a possible hope. But the article, the headlines in one of the automotive magazines that Jay and I sometimes read is saying, oh, it's now it's starting to hurt pickup sales because of pickup truck inventories. Jay, I think, will be on board or talking about this with the idea that they shouldn't worry too much because sales are down. My comment is this will help the dealers that have large inventories of vehicles, General Motors vehicles, that is General Motors dealers, get rid of some of their floor planned inventory that you see in some of the bigger dealers is looking like acres of vehicles. And one of them, I think, is the Ingersoll Chevrolet GM dealership on 22 going towards New York, which I'm sure, Jill, you're familiar with. If you look when you're driving to New York down 22, they have two sides to their buildings filled mostly with pickup trucks and SUVs.
And are they the same ones?
Well, no, I don't go down. No, but you know what the dealers do? They move the vehicles around like department stores change their front windows.
Well, you'd want to.
I mean, a little like you on your parking lot.
But it's also a little bit of merchandising. You know,
it is merchandising. They could be the same ones 4 weeks down the road, and they might be different.
But one of the things that isn't talked about enough is the actual, you know, we talk about headlines and we talk about what but not actually like, all right, I've got a dealership, I've got
Since no trucks can come in on delivery trucks because of the plants all being on strike, today when I go that direction, it might be a great day to take a look at it and see if I can tell. But I can't tell.
Because
you can look at color patterns and all that. But that's you're getting off point of what I was saying, which was the dealers can sell down off their stocks of trucks as opposed to getting more new vehicles in stock that they have to floor plan and start paying on if they don't sell them.
And is any of this intentional?
No.
Okay.
No.
I mean, it's still costing GM tons of money. We're talking about $500-600 million. That was a week ago, so it's probably up to $700-800 million.
Actually, I think
$1 billion.
I don't know what I heard. It's not gotten to $1 billion yet, but it's there.
And were they?
Some comment was like $620 million in potential profits have been lost due to the strike so far.
Yeah. And was there any understanding that could happen?
Well, it's always when a strike is pending or something. I don't know that there was any understanding that it could happen to the degree it's happened so far. This is the longest strike in 50 years?
I don't know if it's 50 years.
It's pretty long.
It's a long time.
It's a long time for a strike to continue to exist after a strike starts and the mediation talks start talking, because nobody wants the strike to last any longer than it has to. But the UAW's is dug in, and GM is dug in, and they're not meeting at any kind of agreeable point yet. So I think we don't need to talk much more about it unless
it's going to get uglier than before it gets better.
As many things do, simply because, you know, negotiating through the press.
And we haven't gotten to Ford and FCA yet either.
But as far as sales are concerned, I mean, let's remember that these U.S. manufacturers usually have an inventory of about 80, 90 days, which is, in my opinion, way too much inventory to begin with.
But they consider it somewhat normal.
But, theoretically, you could go 80 days and
still
before
be,
you run
and,
out of cars.
And you're
obviously,
throwing
some models sell well, others do not. So they're going to
–
the reality is they're probably going to run out of trucks before they run out of Chevy Malibus.
Right.
So another comment Jay made as we were coming to broadcast booth this morning was, I asked him a question, are the electric Porsches going to render the gasoline Porsches obsolete? Your word was yes.
I don't know if they're going to render them obsolete, but Porsche is certainly going the electric
route.
As is the whole VW group.
And as are many other manufacturers.
Yes, but Porsche has, you know, they're coming out with the Taycan right now in 2020. They have, what is it, 20, 30,000 pre-orders for the car.
I believe they do, yeah.
They've hired more more people to build the cars. They've hired an extra 1,500 people. They're going to be hiring another 500 people.
They're increasing the output planning on this car. The interesting thing about it is that the electric vehicles, as we have not said it with as much emphasis as I think we should, are very fast vehicles. And Porsche is a very high-performance car company, as is Ferrari, as is the M division of BMW and the other manufacturers. And these electric vehicles are actually faster than most of the company's gasoline supercar models that they put out. And since when you buy a Porsche, part of the allure of buying a Porsche and or an M series, BMW, etc., is the, at least on paper, the performance characteristics that you have when you own one of these vehicles, whether you or not you utilize it. And I think the Taycan, we said on this show, I said, maybe Jay agreed, that it was one of the most important new cars that's hitting the road right now of any manufacturer, I think.
Well, it's heading the Model S Tesla head on, and looks like it's going to compete very aggressively, and that it's got the bones to do so. It's also going to cost more money because as we've mentioned before, it goes between 150 and 180 grand. But back to Porsche's bigger picture, they are betting on the electrification of the future. The next Macan, which is their best-selling model, which is their smaller SUV. It's not small, but it's smaller than the Cayenne. In 2022, when the new Macan comes out, it will be solely
electrified.
Electric, right? So they're betting pretty heavily on.
And we'll just have to see how that goes. What I will say is, in terms of people who buy these cars, you know, who wouldn't be psyched for a new, very fast electric Porsche?
Jay,
there's no sound. There's the biggest downer with.
But what you don't know
with
is,
electric cars, and I don't know if you remember when I went to that thing.
But what I don't the
car show in
the car show in Farmington.
But again,
what will remain to be seen is because. People like new things, and I'm talking about car aficionados. So they're, you know, people are going to get it, and then they're going to see whether they like the sound or the lack of sound or not.
Well,
and
interestingly, I read through. It was a pretty extensive test review of the Taycan by one of the journalists, and I think it was Jalopnik. Anyway, it was a 400-mile test, and he, through the article, he describes the different sounds that the car makes, and they've built in artificial sounds.
Yeah. Anyone remember CDs and vinyl?
They may be computer-generated sounds, for all I know.
Some of them are totally artificial sounds. Others are there to cover some actually transmission sounds that they do have, even in those cars. And
it's a whine, a lot of it.
Yeah. Anyway.
Anyways, I don't think we need to belabor too much about the sounds of these cars.
The
point of
the
matter
is
that Europe is moving very much faster than the U.S. is. I think some of it is. Not necessarily misguided, but misunderstood in that none of the countries in Europe, and I want Jay to answer this question because he's the most knowledgeable, are really large enough to sort of be mileage limiting on a daily drive basis. If you were to be driving around Europe and most of the time staying within one country. Whereas in the U.S. you drive multiple states distances. Many people still do and are going to, and while the recharging infrastructure is probably growing daily, or at least monthly, if not daily, you're still going to have a degree of time here in this country, probably longer than in Europe, where some of the infrastructure won't be located in areas that Americans still like to visit, like side roads off major interstate arteries and that kind of thing. But there's no question that there's a full bore move to bringing forth electric cars to us at a dealership near us sooner rather than later. Now we talked about how long it was going to take about 2 years ago, and now I'm saying, and Jay probably agrees, I hope, that it really is that VW Group, for one, is really going to be hitting us with an onslaught of electrically powered vehicles in the next 4 years or so.
So is Ford.
Ford.
Ford has said they are late to the game, but they plan on having a bunch of models out around in 2022. They're going a slightly different route in the sense that they are not building electric-specific models. Usually, and I think we talked about it very briefly last week or the week before, electric car platforms, when they're designed from the ground up, are specific to electric cars, and the bottom of the underbelly of the car is where the batteries are located, and it's an integral part of the chassis structure.
Well, for example, the new Explorer is going to have electric variants coming out, probably both hybrid and electric, and they are redesigned as a gasoline engine vehicle primarily from the start. But the SUV structure makes it very adaptable to battery platforms underneath. You really have a drivetrain area which you need to keep available underneath the body of those cars, and brake lines have to go through conduits to get to front and rear wheels and that kind. But I think the platform is more conducive to variable electric drivetrains being added to these vehicles than they are to the straight passenger cars that we have been seeing, like the Malibus and the Tauruses. Although, of course, we know Ford has had a Fusion plug-in and pure electric version of the Fusion out for a little while. They're about to go extinct. The Malibu, I think, has got a hybrid version also available, but in general, the sedans have not been battery ready, except for the manufacturers that have offered hybrids for the last 5 years in some of their passenger car vehicles.
And is there any thought that these vehicles, once they go out to the consumer, will have a similar what I'm going to refer to as hybrid resistance?
No, I think the resistance is going to go down. The biggest resistance has been from dealers and salespeople and dealers. I've talked off and on through the years in this show about how you go into a dealership and you want to talk hybrids. First of all, they don't have any hybrids, or at least Hyundai didn't. They had maybe one or two, but they didn't have any assortment of hybrids. And they didn't want you to really emphasize your interest in hybrids because they can't get those hybrids fast. And as I've said recently and before, the goal of any salesperson at any dealership is to not let you get out of their dealership without having a contract on a vehicle. And when they only have one or two hybrids in their lots and they've got 150,000 gasoline versions, they want to try to transfer you into the gasoline version car at all costs because they want you to walk out with a car and they've got a contract for money.
I think that, I don't know if it's a philosophical issue, but a hybrid car, really, you're doubling the problems, the potential problems. You have both the internal combustion engine and the electric motor. So you have two powertrains. So you have two sources of either maintenance or problems.
Of which there have been none on most of the hybrids. There have been none on most of the hybrids.
But the dealers won't tell you that. I mean, I think of one car that's very complex is like the Volvo's hybrid. It has an internal combustion engine that's both turbocharged and supercharged, which is, I think, the only engine on the market that has the two forms of
there are a couple more, I think, that are out there. But in any event, he's right.
And
about
on top
this.
Of that, they have the electric motor. And it just is a very, very complicated powertrain.
Out of warranty, if it breaks down, it'll be brutally expensive to fix.
Exactly.
But you don't have the same complexity in the Camry hybrids, Hyundai Sonata hybrids, and that kind of thing. First of all, they're front-wheel drive, most of them, and they haven't gone four-wheel, although that's beginning to happen. And secondly, they're not supercharged and or turbocharged the way the Volvo situation is. So, yes, Jay is correct about the Volvo specifically, but he's not correct about the cost factor so far on the standard hybrid drivetrains.
potential.
Yes, but nobody's going to think about that. They don't have to think
about it. At the far, far, far end user of all of that, which is, this is all great, but what happens when people actually, what are they going to do? Have a mass just removal of all combustion engines so that the only thing
well,
on the
lots?
Well,
there are European company countries, and I think New Brunswick and Canada is planning to go all electric by 2025.
Which is terrific, and we should just emphasize at that juncture, at this juncture, that many of these cars are diesel cars, not
well,
the electric cars.
That's
but the,
not why, though. That's not why they're going electric.
You mean
they're
in Europe?
In Europe, there's a lot of diesel. You just have to... And New Brunswick, a lot of diesel. I'm not saying that that's good, bad, or indifferent. I'm just saying that it is.
Okay. Enough said.
yeah, we'll see.
So, but I was referring to
here.
Let
me talk about tires for a minute, because I had a tire meltdown last week on Route 8 in the form of a...
As long as you didn't
just
have
a
meltdown.
Just a minute. Just stop. Because which I've never experienced in all my years of driving with all my vehicles. And it was an interesting situation because the tires, at least tread-wise, had plenty of life left. Age-wise, they were probably 7 or 8 years old. You don't think too much about them when you look at the treads and forget that they've been on the vehicle for 6 or 7 or 8 years. But I've got other tires that have been on my vehicle 6, 7, or 8 years too, and I've seen cracking around the sidewalls and that like, and I've changed them, but I've never had the experience of having a belt fail in the tire, and it is a interesting situation because it started with a very slight shimmy in my steering wheel going 70 miles an hour on Route 8, and fortunately I was coming towards Waterbury before I got to Waterbury to get off at an exit, which I was going to go to a tire place and have it looked at. I stopped and looked at the tire, and I couldn't see anything wrong. I wasn't losing air. It turned out to be a failed belt. And it kept failing more as I drove further on it, because at one point I thought of limping home at 30 miles an hour from Waterbury to home, as opposed to getting it fixed in Waterbury. Instead, I ended up at a tire store and putting not one but two new front tires on this particular vehicle. And the tire belt had gone so bad that when you actually looked at the right part of the tire where the problem was, the tire walls, the tire was deformed by quite a bit, both in the sidewalls and the surface tread, horizontal tread. And it was not probably safe to have driven a whole lot more before. I don't know what would have happened if it had come completely apart, but it was inside.
I think the moral of the story is, and I can somewhat relate to this, I've been driving a few cars lately that haven't been driven in a long time. And you take them out on the road, and first of all, the tire pressures are usually pretty low, and the first thing you need to do is put air in the tires.
Correct.
But the cars kind of wiggle and jiggle every which direction because the tires have flat spots. So. And sometimes driving the car 20, 30 miles will make the ride smoother again. But I think overall you have to be careful. People who have cars who don't drive them for extended period of time, and there are people around here who go over, leave the area for the winter, for instance, come back in the spring. you do have to be careful with older tires.
You do. And the other
even
thing,
if the tread is fine.
But
even
if the tread is fine. You do have a shimmy in your steering wheel, and what I've learned about a couple things is alignment is probably not the problem in most cases. You can lose wheel weights off sides of tires if you hit bumps, like potholes and that kind. You could lose a wheel weight, and that would cause a similar shimmy type of situation. So I was trying to think as this event unfurled, what it could be before, but as it got worse and worse, I figured it couldn't be the wheel weight situation, and this turned out to be a bad belt. And people who do leave their cars parked in garages all winter, because I store some for people, will have a flat spot feeling, but it won't be the same problem that I ended up having with my tires. And it was quite an interesting situation because it's the first in over 45 years of driving many vehicles.
It's just to keep you engaged and interested.
And it keeps the tire business sales going too as well, because you couldn't just put one on. I need to put two on because they didn't have the duplicate tire that failed. So I couldn't put a duplicate tire on and get home in the same day that this all occurred.
And why two and not four?
Because First of all, I'm not driving a lot of miles on the vehicle per year, and the tires are three tires. I kept the good one for a spare later on.
Okay.
Probably don't need to be replaced
just
until
curious.
They fail.
Yeah, just, yeah. You know, for people who don't even know what a wheel
tires
is.
Are expensive.
No
brings
kidding.
Me to a.
Jay's redoing his Touareg one by one.
Yeah, I've been very unlucky this year. I've had punctures that I've needed that have
required new tires.
Required new tires, and it's really been one by one, and I have one to go, and I know I'm not replacing it until it something
until,
bad happens.
All right, well maybe
but that's
the
just
belt
my
will
bad
go.
Luck.
We're into the safety zone.
Well, in the safety zone, and speaking of tires, if you drive any length of time on the highways, you will see. Remnants of large truck tires.
Yes,
and
you will. Carcasses strewn on the
and
interstates.
I hate to say it, but trucks oftentimes
retreads
run with retreads and run with their tires until the tires explode, and it's just a money saving thing. And they figure we have 18 wheels on the tractor trailer, and we can lose one or two, and bring the truck to a stop. The consequences of that can be pretty scary. I mean, I've been next to a tractor trailer when a tire exploded, and it really is an explosion. And I know somebody recently who was in a car that ran over the leftovers of a
tire,
and it did substantial damage to the car, and they were on the side of the road for a couple hours. So you have to be careful.
I have somewhat of a rant on that, too, because it's interesting that you don't see most – well, this is something that I wish state personnel, such as state police, might do more than continue to drive by them the way the rest of the public does. Instead of try to get those carcasses off to the side of the road in safety. Because when they're in between two lanes, as many are, or in the middle of a lane, and you're in a busy highway, parties behind two or three vehicles behind the ones in front of them can't necessarily see these carcasses. And you really, this is another concentration on your driving lesson when you're on such a road, because you really need to watch what the cars are doing in front of you if you can't have a clear view of the road ahead to see these carcasses, because they are dangerous. First of all, they're big and thick, and they're generally curled up at a point, so they don't just go underneath the underbody of your car if you're able to straddle them. They're going to hit something underneath, and who knows what they're going to do. There may be steel in those treads. Bandag is the sort of patented retreading company of the retreading tires world. I didn't really think about it, but they still exist, and you still see them on many of the truck tires, truck users, because they are a cheaper alternative to buying the brand new tires. I do not know what mileage tractor trailer truck tires have on them. I bet they're pretty much maybe 50,000 to 80,000 miles, I think.
I used to
the
know,
ones
and
that
I
go
have
straight.
To admit, I totally forgot.
And are they rotated? Or there must be
and you don't rotate truck tires as far as I know. You might rotate. I know. I don't think you do.
Okay.
And the tractor trailers, you don't do anything. You just drag them along. So nobody thinks about that, and then they fail. And they could be any one of those 18-tire vehicles that would lose a tire.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.